How do we reimagine new frameworks for economic prosperity without jeopardizing kind of planet Earth and life here? Big question to start with.
It is. Well, I suppose all the questions will be big questions. This is nothing new. We've already started doing this. You know, and so, I mean, in that sense, all societal change, which is sort of what I'm passionate about, is already underway. So it's about having a look at several things. One is what's happening, right? What can we learn from? What can we build off? And the other thing is having a look internally, inside of ourselves, and sort of what would we like to improve and what does or doesn't need to shift. And that does require some fairly rigorous, radical thinking. And that's sort of a discipline we all need to, I suppose, really learn and encourage. We're not really encouraged to do that adequately in our lives and our education. But just coming back very briefly to the sort of, if you like, economic models and economic thinkers that are already looking at these areas. I mean, Herman Daly's been doing it for quite a long time in his steady state economics. There's circular economy out there. One of the newer ones is Donut Economics from Kate Raworth. And another new one that came out very recently, and it's really sort of captured Europe and the Spanish, or sort of not Spanish world, yeah, Spanish world really, is Degrowth from Serge Latouche. So those models are already out there starting to be discussed, worked with. Degrowth, for example, has already had 4 international conferences.
Wow. So what would you say are the basic principles for kind of earth-based economy? Those are quite a few different models, but what, I guess, at its core, would you say are the basic principles?
The unifying factor for all of them would be the ecological damage that our lifestyles are causing and have caused for, you know, quite a significant period of time. In terms of the escalation of it, it's really sort of magnified post-World War II, and we can come back to that later. Some of these things have been out, again, the principles have been out for quite a while. In terms of fundamental principles, I would go back to Carl Hendrik Roberts' work from The Natural Step. And he set out some principles for sustainable society. You know, they're sort of systems conditions that you think much more broadly about. One of them, or there's 4 fundamental principles that he uses. One's that the materials that people take out of the earth can't be allowed to accumulate in the environment. And things that we know about already are lead. So we've had a whole range of initiatives around lead-based petrol, for example, in terms of fueling our cars. Mercury is another one. They're all abundant, relatively abundant in the earth, but they're not in concentrated forms, which can damage ecological systems. And we're part of that. The other one is the materials that are created by humans can't be allowed to build up faster than the ecosystem or the Earth's or planetary system can break them down. The classic ones that are used in Natural Step are DDT and PCPs. So we know DDT, you know, was used very effectively to try and increase our yields in agriculture. The problem was it killed things that weren't intended to be killed. And so that's where Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, comes from. You know, the impact of DDT, and then there was a huge movement to modify our use of it, and we've significantly eaten into that. The other one's PCBs. And of course, PCBs were in refrigeration, and they created the ozone hole. Again, we organised well to reduce our usage of them, and we've effectively started to, if you like, reduce the size of the ozone hole. The modern one, which is now starting to grip the imagination, is plastics.
Yeah.
Right. And so we know that a lot of plastics aren't being broken down. We know that a lot of plastics are now being reimagined in very new ways, you know, to go into facial scrubs. Microplastics. Now, they're just at the right size to be gobbled up and continue in a life cycle change. So that's our modern problem there. The third area is that human activity can't destroy the ability of the earth to provide the services that we all need. And so you see that in the deforestation of the Amazon. You see that in the deforestation, particularly in Southeast Asia for oil palm, etc. You see that even in Australia when we upset wetlands. Right? And so what you've got is the inability to recover and the inability to support us. And then the final one that he's got as a principle are that the resources need to be used equitably and efficiently. And I suppose in that sense, that's where the economic models that we talked about earlier, you know, dynamic economic, steady state, circular, degrowth, come in around reimagining social systems that we need to support ourselves and ones that we can live in well.
Mm. So why, or I guess what are the societal and economic barriers? Because we can identify these things and we can say why they should be in place and the models that we should be using and the models that might work. But what do you think the societal and kind of economic barriers are to implementing sustainable outcomes?
There's plenty of them, if you like, at a tactical level.
Yes.
Many of them will change depending on which society we belong to. I think that there is a fundamental one that we can apply across all of them. And it steps into, if you like, mainstream economics, and you see it reiterated and reified all the time within our political framework and our politicians. And it's the whole logic and concept of growth. I mean, you only have to cast your mind back, you know, a week.
Yeah.
And What's the sort of the healing balm for Australia? Jobs and growth.
Mm.
The problem with growth is that it has got a very narrow economic foundation. To unpeel the logic of growth, it'd take a long, long time than just the few minutes we have got here. But what it does mean is the way in which our lifestyles and our economic models, the way in which we work, all of the values around that, it fundamentally undermines them over the long term. So the example we just used a second ago of stripping rainforests to replace them with soybean or replace them with palm oil plantations, that's a consequence of growth. It's also a consequence of demand. The magnification of it is come about through World War II. And so World War II, we were left with an economic problem of idle machinery. So if it no longer makes bullets and guns, what can we turn that into? And we turned that into our productive capacity that we have now. So I can choose 20 different cars if I want a model. I can choose many shirts. What we've got is the consequence of consumer capitalism as a model that society should follow. And so growth's the key issue. And of course, if you challenge growth, then you're pilloried, and you know the nicest thing that can be put to you or done to you is to stick you in the stocks in Martin Square and have people throw rotten tomatoes at you.
Which I think maybe rotten tomatoes should be thrown at a few more people. Maybe.
It was a good film too.
Now, early next year, you're facilitating kind of a one-day seminar on reimagining the economy and the implications for commerce at UTS. What can people expect from this event? Is this just going to pull apart what we've been speaking about a little bit more broadly?
In that sense, yes. So we're going to go much more deeply into those questions
than
that you've asked in the area.
5 minutes.
The other thing, if you like, in terms of where we're coming from, is to start people thinking in a much broader sense and to start people thinking using systems thinking frameworks, if you like.
Mm.
So the consequences of my actions do have ramifications.
Oh, yeah.
And we quite often don't think about, you know, what will happen when I do this and who will it affect and how will it affect?
It's those ripples that no one pays attention to.
That's true. We're not encouraged to think that way.
Mm.
Right? When we start to solve problems, so if you go back to those early problems on PCBs, for example, it's the ripple effect on PCBs. It's the ripple effect on the use of plastics that go through ecosystems. The other thing is actually then starting to look at the what I call the interrelationship of two dimensions, the places of work, or what we call business models, and then societal models. That comes back to our cultural frameworks, our value sets, and, you know. So they're the two things we're going to be exploring there and unpicking within the subject. And in part to get the conversation going much more broadly, and also to get that conversation going within businesses themselves, the places we work, if you like,
themselves. Yeah, well, see, that's it. You've got to reach that corporate level, because we can do so much in our private lives, but when it doesn't echo into corporate levels and we don't see it echoing, I guess, in those places where growth is so important in our lives, then it's all for nil, if you ask me. Dr. Puri, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.